Hello, Pod. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to The Shameless Plug, in which I don't usually sit down with Empire's Nick Disemley and chat about what's inside the latest issue of Empire, but Chris is, of course, off on his cruise at the moment. And if you're wondering what that looks like, maybe take a look at 1998 Treat Williams' film Deep Rising, and that should give you a decent idea of what's going on over there. But in Chris's absence, it falls to me to pour over the pages of Empire, the world's greatest film magazine. But we are going to mix up the schedule a little bit here. We are not going to go through the magazine page by page. Instead, you are going to fascinate and entertain with a list of your top 10 things inside this issue. There's going to be suspense because I have no idea what is on this list. None.
I wonder how many of them you wrote.
All of them, because they are all going to be my breakdown of the June Part 3 trailer.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you did do that. I was going to say you didn't write anything in this issue. Sadly, that hasn't made the cut, but
List is a joke.
Next month, for sure, something that you've done will be sitting at number one.
Well, thank you.
Because you've done something pretty cool, not to be too cryptic, but you have lived out your ultimate fantasy.
I have.
For our next issue.
Yes.
It's not as tawdry as that made it sound.
It's not quite as sex-oriented as it sounds.
A very wholesome fantasy, yeah. But it's very exciting. You will find out, or will be revealed very soon. But yes, you've heard of The Hateful Eight. This is The Shameless Ten, in which I am going to, you know, not go through every single page of the issue, as we usually do, because I wonder if that might get a little bit tedious for listeners. Let us know. Maybe you like that. But instead, we're going to pick, or I'm going to pick, 10 things that I really love inside this issue, and we can chat about them. And then if you haven't already got the issue, hopefully you can go and seek it out and let us know what you make of it.
Available as it is in all good and evil newsagents.
Indeed. So we're told.
So this is 10 things I love about the issue.
Yes. Well, we're going to start with the obvious one, the guy on the cover. Somebody called Steven Spielberg?
The man with the beard.
The guy with the beard, who... you know, he has been on the cover of Empire before, but a very long time ago. Do you remember which film that was for?
Minority Report.
It was. Yeah, 2002 with Tom Cruise, with the cruiser, the two of them were on. But it's very rare that we have a director on the cover. We almost never do. But we decided to do it this month because, hey, it's Steven Spielberg. And, you know, another factor in it was that his new film, Disclosure Day, is deeply classified. It's, you know, every so often we cover a film that is so top secret that we don't know. The people working on the film don't even seem to know. It's all very encrypted and secret. So, yeah, we thought this would be a good opportunity to go big on the man himself. Do you have a favorite Spielberg memory of doing stuff with Uncle Steve?
Should we call him? Uncle Steven. Yes, we have a long history with Uncle Steven, has to be said. My favorite memory will, of course, revolve around our 20th birthday issue that we did, Checks Notes, many, many years ago.
2009.
2009, was it 2009?
That was now 17 years ago.
Yes, when we decamped, the office basically decamped to a little B&B called The Farmer's Daughter by The Grove in LA. And we all did various things for the issue. We did that big photo shoot, didn't we, all where we reenacted scenes from films. We got like Jodie Foster, Anthony Hopkins, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mel Gibson, other people like that. Great people. We got them to reenact scenes from their films all under the auspices of Uncle Stephen. But normally, just to pull the curtain back on Empire Production a little bit, when we have issue meetings, it's just a bunch of us sitting around the table.
Wondering where Chris is,
absolutely. But, you know, and sometimes they might get interrupted by Zoe from marketing. But this time, this particular meeting was interrupted by Kathy Kennedy and Janusz Kaminski because we had an issue meeting with none other than Steven Spielberg himself at his offices. And his offices were adjacent to the volume where he was shooting Tintin. So when we finished having the issue meeting where he was kind of, we were kicking over ideas for the birthday issue with him, he let us come on to the volume. And he gave me the little controller and he let me steer the Tintin camera. And it was really funny. He was showing me how it works. And that was pretty cool. Being directed by Steven Spielberg is definitely on the bucket list.
He still couldn't get a good performance out of you. But
it's true.
He tried his best. That was an amazing week. And that is the one time I have crossed paths with Steven Spielberg was at the Goonies reunion. I spent many months orchestrating, and we got all the Goonies back together. It was we did the photo shoot and interview on the Tintin stage on the volume.
Nice.
And James Cameron swung by because he just happened to be like in the area, and it was a very, very exciting day. But I got to briefly. He wasn't part of the interview; he was part of the photo shoot, but he was doing loads of other stuff for the issue. So he was off talking to Ian Freer, who we'll come back to in a minute.
Yes.
And I shook hands with him. He actually came over to Chris and I, and he was like, "Hi, I'm Stephen." And we're like, "Yes, I know.
Are you? Are you really? I didn't know that."
But yeah, he is. He is an Empire legend. You know, we've been doing stuff with him for decades. And we gave him the Legend of Our Lifetime Award. I think it was we got him to come to Camden in 2018.
We literally got him to Camden. Yeah.
To the Empire Awards. And I remember in the coverage afterwards, it was literally like the Alan Partridge episode where they're waiting for Roger Moore to arrive, where we literally did a countdown of like, Steven Spielberg's private jet has landed in Luton and now it's going past the big Tesco. And we kind of tracked it all the way to the event. But it was great. And he made a very funny and brilliant speech where he said that he was ruminating about getting this Legend Award, and then he drove past a big billboard for the McDonald's chicken Legend sandwich, which he said put everything in perspective. But yeah, he's our cover story for the first time since Ready Player One. And Ian Freer, who we mentioned earlier, did the interview. Now he is our Spielberg guy. He has literally written a book on Steven Spielberg.
Yes, he has.
He has had many amazing encounters. He got to go around Universal with Steven Spielberg in his golf cart. Steven Spielberg gets a black golf cart. They're normally white on the Universal Studios lot, and he gets a black one. It's the fastest one.
That's amazing. It's got a souped up V8 golf cart. That's excellent.
It's got nitro. Yeah, it's got a button for nitro. He showed Ian on that kind of tour of the Universal lot. He showed him the office where he broke into as a young kid, starting off in the industry. And this is my favorite thing. When Ian went on the set of War Horse, Steven Spielberg got a director's chair made for Ian with his name on the back.
Really?
So he could sit next to him and like watch. So yeah, Ian's had some incredible experiences and knows Spielberg stuff better than ever. There's another good fact about the chairs. Steven Spielberg said daddy on the back of it because he is the daddy of the set. So it's given me an idea for next week. For the office.
Yeah, you should get one made.
So yeah, so Ian spoke to Steven Spielberg again for this cover story. This time it was on Zoom. Fun fact, Steven Spielberg was eating cauliflower soup.
Cauliflower soup?
I'm not sure if he was eating it during the interview, but he had some.
It's quite slurpy interview.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't slurping. So yeah, cauliflower soup was on deck, and we did a pretty amazing photo shoot in LA. Art Streiber, who has shot Steven Spielberg for us before, did a sci-fi tinged shoot on the Universal lot with him for the cover and for the inside. And then in a separate part of the cover story, Ian talked to all the actors and David Koepp, the writer of Disclosure Day, to try and get some information out of them.
To try and find out. So we should say that this is the new film. It's out on the 12th of June here in the UK. Stars Emily Blunt, Josh O'Connor, Colin Firth, Eve Hewson, who else? Common Domingo. And from what we know from the very cryptic trailer, it is about the disclosure that alien life exists and apparently likes to communicate via the medium of weather forecasts. Mm. But you'll understand more from the trailer. But the interview, so as you say, we've got a making of feature discussing, you know, talking to the cast, talking to everyone involved in it. But we also have that sit down with just Ian and Stephen, and he drops, I would say, the most important thing that I've ever heard him say. And it is definitely the high point of the issue, where he says his favorite science fiction movies are Dune and Dune Part 2. And I think, really, that says everything you need to know.
They're his favorites of all time, or just his favorite ones recently?
Among his favorites of all time.
You might be hyping that up slightly.
He name-checked them. He is a Dune head, and I respect him for that.
How do you feel about the fact that he also said that he's going to get to see Dune Part 3 ahead of time, so he will see it in front of you?
It's understandable, isn't it? It's like, if Steven Spielberg wants to see your film, you just let him see it. I think that's just a given. I would like that to be true of me. Sadly, it is not.
I will make a special chair for you that says Dune Daddy when you watch it.
Yeah, I like
Dune
that. Daddy. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this movie, Disclosure Day, is so top secret. We know it's about aliens. We know Steven Spielberg's directing it. We know who's in it. We don't, you know, there isn't that much information out there. The internet has gone buck wild with rumors. So I don't know. Have you heard all these rumors? There's a rumor that it's
Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind.
It's Close Encounters 2. There's a rumor that Steven Spielberg is working for the government, and this film is actually going to reveal the reality of alien life. So it's like a documentary.
I really hope that's true.
But there's all kinds of mad ballyhoo. But anyway, we kind of did the first interviews with the cast, and the only ones so far, I think. And you know, we even got the character names, which was genuinely, there was a whole big conversation about the character names, spoilers, and can we run them? And so, you know, the level of detail. And it's always, I don't know about you, but sometimes when you're doing the first interview in the world and it's really, it's something really top secret. And someone will just say something and you're like, is that a massive like, bit of, sometimes you're like the hairs on your back. I remember I did the Indiana Jones 5, didn't have a name at that point, but ended up being Dial of Destiny and interviewing the actors. And sometimes they tell you stuff and then you get a note afterwards saying, please don't reveal that. That was a massive like third act thing. But it's exciting, but also can be quite challenging. Covering something where you don't know anything. So you don't know if something is going to be a big plot spoiler or whether it's just, you know.
Yeah.
What's the most top secret thing
you've written about? That's difficult.
You did the first Avatar.
I did do the first Avatar, but the thing is, like, the reason why I kind of almost don't think that was super top secret is because the scriptment that Cameron had written for that had been online for years, like that was available. So people kind of, I think, if they wanted to dig around, I mean, it changed, it evolved, but I think people knew the broad strokes of that film before it came out. But certainly I had the first inkling of what it was going to be. And as I'm sure you can imagine, that was a really hard thing to articulate to people. I'm basically going up to people saying, you're going to shit yourself with your mouth wide open. And they were like, I don't understand what you're talking about. Why would I want to do that? But
It can sometimes feel like you're carrying around these classified redacted secrets, and you're absolutely kind of terrified of losing your dictaphone, and suddenly they've got, you know, all the Odyssey interviews on it.
You're interviewing someone in their office and your eyes stroll to like the board behind them, and like all of the storyboards for this top secret thing are up there and they haven't thought to hide them.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, I arrived for the set visit and they said, I'll just go in that room and just wait. We'll pick you up. And I went in the room and it was the entire film storyboarded, like literally. And I was like, is it bad for me to have a look? And like, but it was amazing. It was all the way around the walls and on the ceiling. They were just like the entire film. So that was quite exciting. But yeah, it's, we're very lucky. But anyway, Ian, drills into Disclosure Day. It's a really great read. I mean, I still not entirely certain. I mean, the entire third act of the movie has been forbidden from going in marketing,
and rightly so.
And I like that. I'm here for more secret movies and them not giving away stuff in the end of the film in the trailers, which happens a lot. So
100%.
I'm excited we got this top secret summer blockbuster. It feels very old school.
Yeah, well, it also makes it feel like an event, because I think nowadays marketing works so hard to give away as much as possible to get as many bums on seats. But, you know, when it's a Steven Spielberg film, I think they can rely upon him to a certain extent, and he's able to shut that shit down. So, I love that this is a secret thing. And I really enjoyed the interview that Ian did with him, talking about his love of sci-fi, his influences, all the things that, you know, that have essentially led him to where he is now. Although there is one thing I would take issue with, Steven. One thing only. He says, you know, the one genre he's never really touched upon is horror. He's never done a horror movie. And I put it to you that Jurassic Park is in many ways a horror movie.
Well, I would say Jaws is more of a horror than Jurassic Park.
Is a very legitimate point. Yes, Jaws as well. Another horror film.
I mean, when I was a kid and I saw Jaws, I was genuinely terrified of sharks coming out the little grills and swimming pools, which isn't logistically possible.
But, no, that would be tricky.
But arguably no film has scared more people than Jaws. So
yeah, I agree with you. Don't know why I went straight to Jurassic Park there. AI, absolutely horrifying. Steven, no. He's
a dinosaur that spits at you is terrifying. So anyway, I urge you to check it out. It's, you know, there's still secrets, but Ian gets some great little stories and information out of all of them. And
he does.
And it's, like you say, it's a lovely emotional interview with Stephen, who came up with a story for Disclosure Day himself.
Amazing.
Which is cool. Yeah. All right. Are you ready for number two?
Go on, hit me with it.
All right. We're going back to the news section, edited by Beth Webb, and a story written by Jamie Graham and pitched by Jamie Graham. Stinkovision.
Yes, I saw this. It fascinates me that this is going ahead. I will never ever experience it personally. I find the idea of 4DX too distracting, but sort of scratch and sniff like poo smelling thing. No, just absolutely not under any circumstances. But this is a thing that is happening.
So yeah, the film is the upcoming Dead Lover. It's a necrophiliac rom-com, and there are 10 funky smells that you can experience, including ghost puke, banana,
yes,
and kill shot.
Banana is not nearly as tasty as it might initially seem.
No, because apparently it's inspired by a line of dialogue. I want to pick up a piece of your poo and eat it like a banana.
Yes.
So this film is not based on a story by Steven Spielberg.
No.
I am fascinated by the fact they are trying to bring this back. I think this is something that was it in the 50s?
Smell-o-vision.
Yeah, Smell-O-Vision. And when they were trying to, you know, they had the Tingler and all those kind of like, you know, I guess 4DX, the original 4DX, where they're trying to make the screening as visceral as they can. So your seat is buzzing and there's water squirting at you and the smell of rotting poo banana, I guess. But anyway,
yeah.
Jamie was very brave and he went along to a screening and you get given a card and you scratch it and you sniff it and you regret your life choices. But I really, for his bravery, I'm putting it in my top 10.
That's fair. Did you know that John Waters' film Polyester used Odorama, which was a similar kind of scratch and sniff thing that was given to audiences? Because Smell-O-Vision was actually piped into the room. But this scratch and sniff thing has a long and storied history.
I did not know that. Well, it's back.
John Waters would be pleased.
Yes, if you fancy a ghost puke, Dead Lover is apparently showing now. I'm not sure how long for. get down there. Okay, number three is also in the front section. It's a great little regular idea that Beth came up with called the MVP, which is just a way of us saluting one person each month.
And you chose me for my breakdown of the Dune Part 3 trailer. That's very nice of you, Nick. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Let's come back to that. No, the MVP this month is James Ortiz, who is, as you know, the voice and puppeteer of Rocky in Project Hail Mary. Yes, exactly. Already the most quoted character of the year in the Empire office and probably everywhere, including on spaceships, NASA spaceships. But yeah, I don't know if anyone has made such an impact in cinema this year as James Ortiz for puppeting this bizarre creation. So we catch up with him.
Alex Godfrey, we should say, spoke to James Ortiz. But the question is, Nick, did he fist his bump?
That is a question for Alex and possibly HR.
Yes. What happens in the interview stays in the interview.
Exactly. But yeah, there's some great little nuggets there. We find out that Rocky's original voice was a bit Katharine Hepburn.
Of course it was.
I'm struggling to imagine, but not sure that would have worked. All right, number four. We talked to Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden. Are you an Iron Maiden fan? You have the demeanour of someone who might be.
So I have the demeanour of a man who was never an Iron Maiden fan, but was taught fencing by Bruce Dickinson.
What?
So, so I do have an inside track to Iron Maiden via the end of a foil. Yes.
Sorry, there are two bombshells in one sentence there. You were taught fencing. First of all, you can fence.
I can. Yes.
Okay. Was that a useful skill?
not massively. No.
And how did Bruce Dickinson come into this?
He is a long-time competitive fencer. In fact, I believe he was actually ranked almost top 10 in the UK at one point in the 1980s. But around that time, he would teach fencing and he taught fencing at my school. And so I was a pupil of Bruce Dickinson.
Absolutely mind-blowing bombshell. Have you been paragliding with Alice Cooper?
No, never. Okay. It's just the fencing with Bruce Dickinson. That's the extent of my metal sports.
He is a metal legend. Iron Maiden has not only influenced cinema, most recently with the Bone Temple, the incredible climax of the Bone Temple, but some of their songs have been inspired by movies like The Wicker Man. But we talked to him. Amazingly, he revealed that he had no idea that Iron Maiden was going to be in the Bone Temple until after the film came out.
Really?
No one told him.
Did they not need, I don't know, permission for the song?
It doesn't seem so, because he told us that he heard about it after the film came out, where people texting, friends of his texting him and telling him so. Yeah, that's kind of amazing.
That's wild.
But yeah, Alex did this interview, and it's a really fun read. And I was thinking about other music legends who we've interviewed. We had Mick Jagger for Slow Horses.
We did, yeah.
Slow Horses is really hard to cover. It's for some reason, it's really difficult. As we're talking openly on the Shameless Plug, it's hard. We try and cover it. We love it. We quote from it all the time. Some of us even have a Jackson Lamb-esque approach to hygiene
in many ways, in
tribute to the show.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get access. But yet, we got Mick Jagger to talk about the theme tune.
We did. Chris Hewitt, I believe, spoke to him.
There we go. So Bruce Dickinson, well worth a read. And it shows that you ask for, there's an Iron Maiden documentary coming out. That's why
we did
that.
Yes, that's the reason. We didn't just hang out. We just think, who should we talk to this week? I don't know. Seal.
We happened to be fencing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we said, come in, have an interview. No, we are. There is a new Iron Maiden documentary coming out, which is called Iron Maiden Burning Ambition.
And apparently very good, according to our 4-star review.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but I would like to. And
it
I hope
rocks,
there's some Bill
apparently.
And Ted clips in there. Yeah. Mm. It metals. Okay, well, moving on to the review section. That's a good segue. I'm going to pick a review from here just selfishly because it's a show that I've started watching and it's on my mind at the moment. For All Mankind, which I believe you are up to. You're a fan
of. I am indeed. So Helen gave this the full 5 stars, did she not?
Yeah, she did.
She did. It's a very good season of television. I've seen all of this particular season. I'm very, very excited to talk about it. Actually, I say all of it. I've seen all of the ones that are made available, which actually, frustratingly, do not include the finale. So I've seen everything except the very end of it. But it's very, very good. This show has advanced. This is the fifth season, and it skips forward basically 10 years, pretty much, give or take a year of either side.
No spoilers. I have remained spoiler-free, but I have just started season two, and I think the whole show is going to span 70 years.
Something like that,
starts in the 60s and comes up to the present day. And I love that it feels so epic, and it'll suddenly jump forward 10 years, and you'll be like, what? But I'm loving it. I thought season one was absolutely incredible, and so I just wanted to highlight this as something I'm excited about, because I'm binging
it. It is exciting, not least of all because I genuinely believe with this show that every season has improved upon the last. Each one is better than the previous one, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. I do pity Joel Kinnaman, who is under an increasing mound of prosthetics by this point.
If you can look like Guy Pearce in Prometheus.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's playing an octogenarian at this point. You're just like, oh my god, it's like, how do you even begin to get ready for each day shooting? But it's a really good show. I highly recommend it.
It made me want to go to the moon.
5 stars from Helen O'Hara.
Okay. All right. Number 6 is Jet Li.
Jet Li. Jet Li. Literal hero.
He is a literal hero. And he is the one. Sorry, Chesney Hawks. So this Jet Li has a memoir coming out. It's a very philosophical memoir, by all accounts. I started reading it, and it's really interesting. It's really emotional. Like, he's talking about his philosophy towards life, and he's had an incredible life, even outside of all of the amazing action films he's made. If you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in China, parts 1 and 2, they're incredible. Obviously, Hero. Obviously, Lethal Weapon 4. And I'm not joking, because I love Lethal Weapon 4.
No, it is. Really? It is. I have to say, like, Lethal Weapon 4 is very far from my favorite Lethal Weapon. Jet Li is an absolute legend, but unfortunately, I would say that The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, and Lethal Weapon 4 are still things he has yet to apologize for. But other than that, legend.
I really like Lethal Weapon 4, so that I'm just going to say it's got a great car chase. Jet Li is a fantastic villain. It has the least convincing stunt double for Mel Gibson. If you watch the forklift truck action scene at the end, I paused it once, and it is very clearly like a sort of 60-year-old Chinese man instead of Mel Gibson. But anyway, back to this. Kevin E.G. Perry did a big old epic interview with Jet Li and talked to him about, you know, breaking into Hollywood, how his fighting style inspired Hollywood action cinema, and it did have a massive impact. And he had to fight really hard to keep kind of the purity of what he wanted to do. He talks about facing down a tsunami. He survived a tsunami, like in real life. He's had an absolutely incredible, incredible life.
And he also survived 3 Expendables films.
And he also did that. Yes, he also did that. What's his character name? He has a terrible character name.
His name is Yin Yang.
Oh boy,
which is problematic on so many levels.
Oh boy, I would say character names are maybe not Sylvester Stallone's specialty.
No, it's no Lee Christmas, but you know what is?
Oh my god, incredible. So anyway, that is number 6. Right, number 7 in the Shameless 10 is a feature. It is Power Ballad, written by Chris. He spoke to Paul Rudd. He spoke to Nick Jonas. And he spoke to the director, John Carney, who I absolutely love Sing Street. Obviously, he did Once as well, but Sing Street is a massive personal favorite. He does these really sweet, emotional, funny films that are kind of based around music. And
always, he's obviously, yes.
And this film is about a guy who does a wedding band, which is called The Bride and Groove, I believe. It's got an good excellent punny name. Mm. Yeah. And he has a tune which gets nicked by Nick Jonas, who's playing a pop star, who nicks his song, and it blows up and becomes massive. So they had to create a brand new song for the film, and it's super catchy. I've still got it in my head. I saw it a couple of months ago. I've still got it in my head. But yeah, this is a really sweet film.
Of feuding musicians. Yes, I enjoyed Flora and Son, which was the last film that John Carney did. He also, do you ever see Modern Love? He developed Modern Love for TV. I read a lot of that as well.
No, I haven't. That's good. I haven't seen
Flora and Son
either.
Based on the columns.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to number 8. Another feature. This is Mother Mary. And we talked to the writer-director, David Lowery, all about it. David Lowery will always be a hero of mine, because he came to our all-nighter 2 years ago.
Do you remember this? I didn't know that he turned up to it. I know I didn't turn up to it. So, you know, he's done better than I did.
Yeah, we programmed an all-nighter at the Pitch House Central, and we each picked a film. Mine was The Frighteners, which went on at 2 a.m. We had a captive audience, so I could do what I wanted. I almost chose a Laurel and Hardy film. I wonder how that would have played. But yes, we were there, and then there was a guy just sitting on his own in the front row, and we were like, is that David Lowery? And so we went over and said hi, and it was David Lowery. He just saw, he'd seen the poster for our thing, and
To be clear, you hadn't programmed The Green Knight or something, and he wasn't coming to introduce it. He just rocked up to watch the films.
He just rocked up, yeah.
How many did you watch?
He stayed for The Frighteners, because I remember I talked to him, and said he hadn't seen it on the big screen. I don't think he stayed for Barb and Star, Go to Vista Del Mar, but I think, to be fair, that came on at like 5 a.m. or something. It was deranged, and it was we were all losing our minds at that point. But yeah, he stayed through...
That is wild.
...through Bound, trying to remember what else. Oh, The Quick and the Dead. That was Chris's choice.
Solid choice.
Anyway, what a hero.
What a hero. Guy.
And now he has made Mother Mary, which is a new movie all about, I think it's like out now, right? Or it's about to come out. But Anne Hathaway plays a pop star, Mother Mary. Michaela Cole plays a former dressmaker who has to make Mary an outfit for an upcoming gig. And it's kind of a trippy psychological movie with original music by Charlie XCX, and it's got a lot of interesting people involved. Yeah. And yeah, he's a very, very interesting dude. You know, he's done The Green Knight, but then he's also done Pete's Dragon. I mean, he's got a very wide range of tone, and I think this is more at the Green Knight end of intensity and spectacle. It's a really interesting read. He talks about how it kind of came out of his sort of personal emotional. I think he sort of said he was going through some stuff essentially. And channeled it all into this film.
And this was a purging.
It was a purge.
Inspired in part, apparently, by Taylor Swift's Reputation Stadium Tour. So that's exciting.
There you go. So that's what got you interested.
That's what got me interested. Also, David Lowery, I should point out, came into our office yesterday because we did a podcast interview with him as well. And he was a lovely, lovely man.
He is indeed. All right. Number 9, we are moving into the last section of the magazine, the home entertainment section, Final Cut. And Chris spoke to Edgar Wright all about The Running Man.
Did.
Yeah, for a big kind of postmortem of that whole experience for him. Obviously, it was a bit disappointing at the box office. It didn't do quite what they wanted it to do. And, you know, it was a challenge. So Edgar talks about that. He talks about adapting it from the book. He talks about Glenn Powell getting injured, which I don't think had been discussed before, but he kind of injured himself halfway through the shoot, so it was a very difficult thing. It was also just a very fast one. Like Edgar had to make that film very, very quickly, so that's a really interesting conversation. All right, we're up to number 10, and we're going to end with Special Thanks, which is usually a small column that goes down the side of one of the spreads. This was an idea that Chris had years ago, and I really loved it. And it took a while to actually get into the magazine, but we put it in and when we did the last redesign. But essentially, if you stay through the credits of a film, and you should, because it's respectful, you'll get to the bit right at the end, just before the studio logos and after the million visual effects people, that says special thanks to, and then there's a list of names. And sometimes there's a name that just makes you go, what? Like, how was that? Why? What did that person do? And so Chris asks each month a different director, like, why did you thank this person, and gets the story behind it. So you get really great stories. This month, it has taken over an entire spread. It is a special thanks special edition. We do Ben Wheatley's Bulk. And if you've seen Bulk, you'll know that it is, the credits are absolutely gonzo. Ben Wheatley has hand drawn them all, or handwritten them all. He scrawled and he has thanked everybody you can imagine. Like, you're probably like, if you're listening to this, you have probably been thanked by Ben Wheatley.
Almost certainly true,
because he's full of gratitude for this film, and he's thanking. Let's have a look. He thanks a burger restaurant in Brighton called Burger Brothers. He thanks Smash Burger, Sushi Mania. He thanks Dickie's work trousers that he likes to wear while he's shooting. He thanks Akira Kurosawa, Martin Scorsese, David Lynch. He thanks James Ellroy, Raymond Chandler. He thanks Doctor Who, Deadwood. He thanks the Elizabeth line, which may be the first time
The Elizabeth line.
Maybe the first time London Underground line has been thanked in a film. But yeah, it's really it's a really fun piece. And Chris spoke to Ben Wheatley and went through the highlights of this and found out why he is grateful to all of these different people stroke restaurants.
And why he only uses the Elizabeth line no matter where he's going.
That is surely reason enough to pick up an issue to find out why Ben Wheatley likes the Elizabeth line. But that is the Shameless 10.
The Shameless 10. Oh, that's a good list. That is a solid. It doesn't even touch on everything in the issue. There are so many other things. Lest we forget, there is me breaking down the new trailer to Dune Part 3, otherwise known as the best thing in this issue of the magazine. What else we got? We got Toy Story 5 stuff, Buzz and Woody versus Big Tech. We got David Frankel talking The Devil Wears Prada 2. Richard Gadd is talking Half Man. You haven't seen Half Man, you should, although brace yourself before you do. It is not an easy watch tool. Richard Gadd, of course, being the creator of Baby Reindeer, the hit Netflix series. And this is his follow-up show with Jamie Bell. There's a need-to-know piece on the new upcoming TV show based on God of War, the video game. Very exciting. Nick, you go berserk about film tie-in book covers, your new bait noir.
Yeah, well, I had to get angry about something.
No, I mean, that's fair. That's entirely fair.
Channeled my rage towards the Wuthering Heights tie-in edition. I'm actually pretty calm about it now.
But okay, he's calmed down.
At the time, I was livid.
Yes.
Yes, I also wrote a little obit to Chuck Norris.
You said goodbye to the great Chuck Norris.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of spending a day with him in, I think, 2006. I went to Austin, Texas, and there were two US Marshals with Chuck Norris. I'm not sure whether they were to protect him or whether he was protecting them. and I went to this kind of mad, like, mixed martial arts mega combat tournament in a giant arena where everyone was just fist pumping the air and Chuck Norris was strutting about. It was an incredible day, and I did a big feature on it. But yeah, I wrote a little tribute to him, the late Chuck Norris.
What else we got in here? Charles Melton talking about Beef season 2. Very exciting. There is a feature on Rivals season 2, the smash hit Jilly Cooper bonkbuster adaptation, which made, we should say, Danny Dyer, no relation, a sex symbol. Who thought that was possible?
The Rivals feature is terrific. I should say Hayley Campbell went on set, and it has an astonishing opening involving bird shit.
It does, yes. And Catherine Pockinson's trailer.
Yes, we should be more specific about that. But it's a really fun read. So I'm going to add that as my 11th.
Oh, an 11th.
I've turned up to 11 in Spinal Tap style.
That's it. And you haven't even included the fact that we have John Woo talking hard boiled.
Oh, 12.
Doesn't want John Woo talking hard-boiled. And I wasn't involved, but Jamie Graham, Ian Freer, Chris, and someone else was in ranking Robert Duvall's cinematic output.
Yes.
Very exciting.
The late, great Robert Duvall.
The late, great Robert Duvall. So, another fantastic issue of Empire magazine. It has a beardy Mrs. Spielberg on the cover. You cannot miss it. It is sci-fi themed. And if you are lucky enough to be an Empire subscriber, you can get the subscriber cover, which is one of my favorite subscriber covers. It's from the same shoot. And it is extremely Close Encounters-y. It is extremely cool. It involves a doorway. It looks amazing. You can find
there
it online.
Very few directors that you can recognize just from their silhouette.
Yes.
In history as well, I think. You know, it's, Hitchcock.
It's Hitchcock, yeah.
Steven Spielberg. I mean, the baseball cap obviously helps. And are there any others? Let us know your thoughts.
Yes, let us know. This is a new competition. What other directors can you identify exclusively from their outline?
You could probably tell John Woo because there'd be two doves.
There would be doves flying above. Yeah, absolutely true. Absolutely true.
But anyway, thanks for listening. Let us know if you like this new format because Chris doesn't normally let me do it.
What, the new format where Chris isn't allowed to be on?
Yeah. Well, Chris is going to be livid I've not included his content in this 10. But yes, thanks. And let us know if you have any questions, anything you want us to talk about. We are your puppets.
We are in many ways your avatars. The new issue of Empire, then, which is issue, checks the spine, 453, and it is on sale now.